Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
A chance opportunity to play with Joni Mitchell in his native Canada helped cement L.A. Moore's lifelong interest in songwriting and guitar playing. After relocating to Florida in 2004, L.A. found himself out of work in the economic collapse of 2008, and this, however, gave him the opportunity to spend time honing his craft of songwriting with other local songwriters and forming the band Not Yet Broken, playing all over the west coast of Florida. In 2021, L.A. produced his first CD of original songs, which garnered international recognition and many awards, including as a finalist in the World Songwriting Awards. So, L.A. Moore, welcome to Song Creating.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
L.A. is not your given name now, right?
Yeah. Well, it's my initials. It's Larry Allen Moore. But the reason I use that as a stage name is if you look up Larry Moore on the internet, you get 2,000 hits, of which I would be very far down the list not paying Google for a Google search. So L.A. Moore comes up usually on the first page, especially if you put in L.A. Moore Music, which is my music website.
It's all about promotion.
Absolutely.
You know, you're nobody if nobody knows about you, right?
Exactly. Well, and now in this day and age, you can imagine with the amount of opportunity to showcase yourself, you have to stand out in some way because there's just so much available. You have to try and differentiate yourself a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. I got to hear, and we all have to hear a little bit about this, this introduction to Joni Mitchell. How far back are we talking here?
We're talking early 80s. I hate to date myself, but I work primarily in the film business. You know, for most of my life, I still do a lot of video production and photography. I was directing some things, some small things. In fact, I worked on several music videos, which we could touch on later. But I worked on a film called Love, which was done in the early 80s and was way ahead of its time. It was produced by a woman named Renee Perlmutter. And she basically asked several prominent women to write vignette segments on love. And Joni Mitchell happened to be one of those writers. Liv Ullmann was part of that movie, Maya Zetterling, who actually directed Joni's segment. But I had an opportunity. I was an apprentice director on that movie. So I got to work with all the directors, learning the directing craft, and got to sit and watch all of the rushes after day shooting. So, of course, Joni showed up for her segment, and I could not pass up the opportunity to bring a guitar. And so, you know, after the screenings were done, we had an opportunity to sit there a little bit and trade some stuff back and forth. There's an interesting sidebar to that, which is that Joni's agent at that time was a guy named Elliot Roberts. He's very well known, represented, I believe he represented Joni and Neil Young and several others at the time. And when we sat down to play, Elliot Roberts looked over her shoulder and said, "No tunings." and so I play in some open tunings that I know that Joni uses, but I always like to say when I do the preamble that I never got them from her because Elliot Roberts forbade it.
So you were actually playing conventional tuning with her.
At that time I was playing open D to show her some of my things in open D. And then, of course, you know, she had some tunings. But I think for most people who know how she does it, her tunings are numbered. So as opposed to it being open D or open C, she'll do like a 1-6-5-2-9 tuning. And that's how she, you know, she catalogs her tunings. And so
you're talking about the scale, right?
Yeah. Well, she'll tune up a half tone and down two tones or up, you know, okay. And she does it by a numbered system, not by a standard kind of, scale system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I know it's the most bizarre, when I started learning about that, I thought, where do you even start with that? But that's okay. We don't need to talk about Joni Mitchell. We're here to talk about Larry Moore.
Yeah.
And so you're now, are you in Palm Harbor still or whereabouts?
I am in Palm Harbor. So I had the great fortune, good fortune to be transferred from Toronto down to Florida around 2004. I was doing video production work and marketing for a Canadian company. And they decided to relocate their head office in Tampa, Florida. And they said, this is your opportunity to move. And being a good Canadian boy who had enjoyed way too many winters, I said, I'm in. And so I had the opportunity to move down here, which has turned out to be wonderful. I mean, it's had its ups and downs, you know, through recession and the good times, but managed to stick it out. And I'm really glad I did because of the music scene that's down here. It's an absolutely wonderful music scene in the Tampa St. Pete area.
It really is incredible. So we've been fortunate enough to get assimilated into Dunedin the last few years. And that whole, we've talked about this with some other folks on the podcast also from that area, how you're really just able to be playing outdoors all year round. And you know, whether you're starting out busking, you can busk 12 months of the year. You know, it's just a very supportive environment down there.
Yeah, incredibly so. And I'm going to catch you up on that a little bit. You don't want to be playing in July.
Well, that's okay. I'll give you that one. You're right.
Unless you've got a big ass fan that's blowing on you. But, you know, you're right. The thing about it is that there is music all year long. It can be outside all year long. Incredibly supportive music scene. And you mentioned some of the people, but, you know, I was listening to some of your podcasts and especially the one with Mark Doran, who's a good friend of mine, and I mentioned the Hideaway Cafe, where we all kind of congregated. You know, it was a songwriting haven. They ran two open mic nights each week, and it was all original music. And so I had an opportunity to meet a lot of fantastic musicians and writers, including Mark, who's written some songs that I absolutely love. Every time I see him, I say, play that one. He's like, I don't know if I even remember it. It's like, I don't care, play it. Because he's got some beautiful songs.
Yeah. Is that Hideaway Cafe no longer in existence?
The Hideaway Cafe just closed after 13 years. Wow. You know, he had 13 good years, and he is still doing special events. There's a place called Bayboro Brewing right now that's opened a really fabulous room that John Kelly, who ran the Hideaway Cafe for all those years, he's now doing a lot of projects out of there where he's manning the board and bringing people in and still running shows.
Is that in Palm Harbor?
That's Bayboro Brewing is actually right down in St. Pete.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that's happened in St. Pete, the whole art scene has exploded down there. Yeah. And there's lots of galleries. They run an art walk night, and Bayboro Brewing is right down there in the center of all that. Several craft breweries have opened up in that area. It's turned out to be a fantastic place, and they're very supportive of musicians and artists as well.
Yeah, St. Pete, I remember, 20 years ago, I remember seeing something. It was like, you know, it was Heaven's Waiting Room. You know, it was just such a, it was where all the seniors would go. Now it is just bustling with young people.
It's exploded and music venues are opening up all over the place. There's a lot of vendor owners that are incredibly supportive. There's always something going on. There's plenty of opportunities to play. There's a lot of cross-pollination, which is great. You know, I've had the opportunity to sit and play with many, many people. People that, like the very first time I ever went to the Hideaway Cafe, the opening act was a guy named Joe Milligan, and he was playing with a guy named Douglas Lichterman, who is a local guitar teacher. And, several years later, once I got into it and started to play and really got the courage up to go out and sort of, you know, really attack it, I had the opportunity to play with Joe Milligan and Douglas Lichterman. And Douglas and I are still friends, play together. I still play with Joe when the opportunity presents itself. So I feel like I came a long way from sitting in the audience watching them to being able to sit in and play with them.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Now, I know a lot of Canadians travel down, vacation down there in the west coast of Florida as opposed to the east coast. And I don't know if you run into that much, or you try to avoid other Canadians when they're down there.
You know, you do see them. I mean, what you see a lot of is Quebec license plates. So you see a lot of more Quebec than Ontario, although occasionally I do see Ontario license plates. I always want to pull up and ask them where they're from, but I don't do it. And I get caught out every once in a while in my Canadian accent. Every once in a while, I'll do my outs and abouts, and I see someone do a double take and say, oh, I didn't realize you were Canadian. So I call myself Floridian.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. That works.
Yeah.
All right. So let's back up now. Let's go way back. You said in around Toronto?
I grew up in Kingston and went to college in Kingston, Queen's University in Kingston. And then I came to Toronto in the early 80s for the film business and started to work in the film business at that time.
So guitar playing was just kind of an aside, a hobby for you?
It was always a hobby. It was It was more, and you know, in a lot of ways over the years, it was therapy. It was a way to relax. And I never really took it seriously as a career. I was always very interested in it. The great thing about Kingston, where I grew up, was that it was halfway between Toronto and Montreal. And so we got all the great acts going through Kingston, usually playing at the university, on their way between the two big cities. So I had a chance to see really amazing performers. It's one of those things that when you can see, especially great guitar players. You know, I had an opportunity to, I don't know if you know Lenny Bro, but I had an opportunity to sit like 3 or 4 feet away from Lenny Bro, who's the guy that basically taught Burton, guess who? Randy Backman. Randy Backman. Oh, he was Randy Backman's guitar teacher in Winnipeg and one of the first guys to do cascading harmonics and that sort of stuff. You know, it's just was such a rare opportunity to see someone like that in a tiny venue up close. So it was really a great place to be.
You know, I kind of find that there's a similarity with myself as having had a photography business all these years, and music was just kind of something that you know, it's another creative outlet. And I know more photographers who were musicians or want to be musicians, you know, and it just kind of comes through. And there's a lot of similarity, I think, between the two in that there's a technical know-how you need to have, as well as a creative ability to really make it work.
And well, I think a visual sense and a musical sense have got some parallels.
Sure. Very much so.
I mean, you see composition. I mean, they don't call it composition they call it composition for a reason. And so, you know, you're putting elements together that somehow make a scene or, you know, evoke a feeling of some kind. And let's not forget about the gear. I mean, you know, if you're a gearhead, then you can get cameras and you can get guitars. It's got a very similar kind of feeling to it.
But there's also the emotion.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's what it's all about.
Ultimately,
you can evoke emotion for sure.
Yeah. Did you start thinking seriously about the music and songwriting only after you moved down to Florida?
Yes. I mean, like I say, it was always a hobby and I really enjoyed playing and I tried to improve my skills. But it was being out of work in 2008. So I moved down 2004. I worked, you know, extensively to 2008. Found myself out of work in that collapse, economic collapse. I started going out to the Hideaway Cafe just to listen to other people. And John Kelly saw me sitting in the office, the owner. He saw me sitting in the audience one time and he said, do you play? And I said, I do. And he said, well, come on out and play. I said, no, thank you. but he encouraged me to do it, and it took a little bit of time and courage for me to get into it. But, you know, doing it twice a week for almost a year, you get rid of some of the stage fright. It was a place where you had to write. So I'm really thankful that was kind of the start to it. It forced you to write and you were up against fairly good songwriters. So if you wrote something that was a bit cumbersome or awkward, you went home and tried to improve it.
Yeah.
I met several people there, including you mentioned the band's actually called Not Broken Yet. I met several people there that became bandmates, and I'm still playing with them to this day. We've produced a couple of CDs. We have some gigs coming up at 7C Music that I mentioned. So it was a great place to meet people, and I managed to meet a few people that I've been playing with for many years now.
So this open mic, I host a couple open mics, and none of them focus necessarily on originals, but some of them do bring in a lot of songwriters. And I'm curious how this one, being only original music, was it also, was there the attitude that you could be constructively, did people invite comments on their songs to or was it not so?
That's a very interesting question. Yeah. I think a little of both, and I can explain that. And I'll tell you an interesting reason why it was strictly original songwriting. John Kelly did not have an ASCAP license.
I was wondering about that.
And so he was very strict about it not being cover songs, because if an ASCAP agent was in the audience, he would be pegged and have to pay the license fee. So he went many, many years running that original open mic until such time as he did get an ASCAP license and you could play covers. But that's how it started. And again, I'm thankful that it was kind of that way, because it did encourage you to get out there and write. There was always comments among the players, great song. And you could tell if someone appreciated what you did. But the thing that was also interesting about it was that there wasn't a lot of general criticism or critique. John Kelly kept it open, and I'm going to say something horrible here, but there's times when you would sit in the audience and go, oh man, that's terrible. But the thing was that John let everyone get up and play. And his feeling was that, and I think about when I started, I was probably terrible when I started too. And there was tolerance, and there was encouragement, and there was the opportunity to sort of get over your stage fright, to improve your writing skills. And then it was equal opportunity for everyone. And in the end, I really respected that and respected him for doing it, because it gave everyone a chance, regardless of their skill.
Well, I think that what I love is I've had some people show up years ago, and like you described, they're tough to listen to. They're just tough to listen. Leave it at that. They're tough to listen to. Okay,
totally understand.
And then they might disappear, or they might come back, and I can name more than a few who you just realize they've been playing and they have improved. And this is what it's all about. And the open mics are give everybody that opportunity to start.
Absolutely.
And there's no money on the line. It's just you just get out there because you love it. You want to do it. And whether it's stage fright or technique or talent or whatever it is, there's something that you're going to improve upon in the course of going through those. However many years or.
Well, one of the things that I don't have to tell you, because your podcast is all about it, there's nothing like a great song. And, sometimes someone can get up there with three chords and there's just something about what they've said and how they've said it that will blow you away. And you don't have to have incredible technical skill or be a monster player. It's about what you're writing about. It's about how you present it. And so I don't know how many times I've sat in the audience and said, boy, that was a really great song. And again, it had nothing to do with that person's technical ability. It had something to do with what they wrote about, the emotion that they put into it, as you said, and what it leaves you with in the end.
Yeah, true. So let's keep going here with your progression now. Did you go back to work after the recession ended?
I'm actually back at work right now these days. I go in and out of corporate gigs when they're available. Nothing like paying the rent.
This is videography, I assume, right?
Well, I'm a director of marketing in the company I'm currently working in.
Okay.
And so I still use the video skills and that sort of thing. But, you know, I sort of branched off into providing general marketing services. So I've been a VP of marketing for a $3 billion company. And I'm working for a smaller company now as a director of marketing, but that's still a skill that I can capitalize capitalize on. So, the music continues to be, I mean, because I had the opportunity to get out there and spend more time on it, it has become, I would say, more like 50-50 now in terms of the part-time versus the full-time. You know, I have to say it was my wife that encouraged me strongly to get out there and produce the CD. And I was kind of like, yeah, why? I don't know. But I am so glad that I did it. The experience was incredibly fulfilling. I'm proud of what I put out in the end. You know, like any artist, sometimes I think it took me 3 or 4 or 5, 6 months before I could actually listen to it. and then one day, it was actually, I was on, you know, J. Cole, I was on 96.7, the Florida Folk Show.
Yep.
I got to be one of the featured artists, also kind of like a dream come true from when I used to listen to it to being on the show. And, you know, I was talking about, you know, how difficult it is sometimes to follow someone who's good. And Gary Harrell, who's one of the hosts, said, he said, I have your CD in rotation in my car. He said, you don't have to worry about following anybody. And I thought, wow, what a great endorsement that was. And that allowed me to get in my car and listen to the CD going home. And I got home and thought, well, you know, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I know. I was so sick of listening to my CD. I just put one out around the same time. I just had it. You know, I didn't want to listen to it ever again.
Sure.
And getting my dog out there in the street, she's barking away. Sitting, I don't know what she did. She's laying in the sun. I don't know why she's complaining. You know, any little imperfection, you know exactly when it's coming.
You know exactly when it's coming. You're listening for it. Oh, boy, do I know that one.
And then I stopped listening to it for a while, and then I put it back in and went, you know, actually, this is okay.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned to you is that I was extremely fortunate in where I did it and the people that got involved in it.
Yeah, you have some real talent on yours.
Yeah, I mentioned Steve Conley, who is he's a local guitar hero. Again, mentioned that he toured with Roger McGuinn as his lead guitar player. You know, Steve is a very interesting character because, you know, if you meet Steve, he's very kind of humble and low key and yet he's a musical savant, and when he goes out and plays, he'll step up front and rip a lead solo that just blow your mind. And so you know, it was one of those things I thought, well, I'm going to take my stuff into this guy and have him work on it and produce it. And in the beginning, you know, it was hard, like as I'm sure you understand, it was hard to sort of let go of it a little bit. You kind of have, you're very protective of what you have and aren't sure how much influence you want. And then I went home and had a sleepless night and thought, you know what, this is the experience. Let's just see where it goes. And I opened up and let him bring what he could bring to the table. Some other great players, a guy named TJ Wedger, who plays in a band here called Cadillac Cowboys. He plays mandolin, slide guitar, dobro, electric guitar, bass. He's just an incredible musician, brought some beautiful stuff to my songs. Sam Farmer, a great local drummer and singer-songwriter in his own right. Douglas Lichterman, the guitar teacher I mentioned, he's playing on it. And my bandmates, Paul Cataldo and John Stone, are both on it as well. So I pulled on a really great pool of musicians. And so, you know, as much as I say, I think it's good. Well, it's good because of the people who are involved in it.
Well, and that's always the case.
Sure.
It is. But you wrote the songs.
I wrote all the songs. They're all my own original songs.
Yeah. And that's great. And there's a good variety on there too. There really is.
Thank you.
So let's go way back, growing up in Kingston.
Sure.
Did you have a musical upbringing?
Well, in a way I did. And the way was, first of all, my father was the local celebrity baritone or tenor, male baritone, I guess. He sang in all the local musicals. So my dad was in My Fair Lady and Carousel and Music Man and all those things when I was a kid.
I'm picturing this classic community theater in an old wooden theater.
Yeah. Well, in fact, they had a tent theater in Gananoque. And so he did tent theater for years. You know, it was the local grand theater and the high school theaters that these shows were put on in. So I had that strong influence from an early life. My dad played trumpet in a military band. So when I was in grade four, They came around to the public school and they did musical aptitude tests. And I was one of the four people chosen to be bused from my school to another school for band practice. And it was actually taxi. So I felt like a king for a day because a taxi would show up and pick the four of us up and drive us to another school where we would have band practice for a couple of hours. And I played trumpet in the public school and high school band up until, you know, grade 13, when guitars kind of hit and trumpet became uncool and guitar became cool. So I sort of let the trumpet slide and took up guitar playing.
You may need to explain grade 13 to us Americans, because we're going to go up to 12. Is this like the volume that goes up to 11?
Yeah, I think that is a Canadian thing, that it's the fifth year of high school before you get admitted to college. So, it's something kind of unique.
Then the electric guitar scene happened.
Yeah, I started off with an acoustic guitar. And at the college, one of the guys who came and played at the college all the time was Bruce Cockburn.
Oh my gosh.
And so, again, up close and personal, sit in the front row and watch that man play and be totally inspired. And I've got a equipment story that sort of goes with that. So I was going to Queens, and Bruce Cockburn was playing a concert at the college. And I was there with a friend of mine who had he had the university radio show. He was one of the hosts on the university radio show. So he was going to be interviewing Bruce Cockburn after this concert. And we were both sitting up in the balcony overlooking the stage. And Bruce Cockburn was playing this really cool, beautiful sounding guitar. And I said, please ask him about that guitar. And so he came back. He said, it's a guitar. It's called a Larrivé. It's made by a local guitar builder in Toronto. So, needless to say, I became infatuated with Larrivés. I own two of them now. I've had several over the years. I've had nice conversations with Matthew Larrivé and John Larrivé Jr., you know, both of John's sons. But, you know, strong influence from the people who came through town, you know, saw Dan Hill play there, Cockburn, other great guitar players came through town.
Wow. And the Larrivé guitars, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
So they must be made with like a Canadian spruce or something. The wood's just different up there.
Yeah. For years and years and years. I mean, he moved from Toronto out to Vancouver and Vancouver Island because he was near the Sitka spruce.
Sitka spruce.
Which is it's a highly sought after and used top wood. And then one of the things about John Larrivé is he travels all over the world looking for the best wood. And so he's finding, sourcing the best mahogany, the best rosewood and other exotic species. But that's part of his thing is trying to find the best wood. So let me just decline that scam call.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. Larry, the song we're going to talk about today is off your album, your 2021 release. Even though we've had a lot of laughs here today with this interview, this is not a song that to laugh about, and you certainly had some difficult times that inspired this. And the song is called "Reach Out," and why don't you just tell us a little bit about what brought this on?
So, I'm glad you framed it that way, because it is serious. And you know, the song has some buoyancy to it, but the subject or the impetus behind it was the death of a friend. It was a friend who committed suicide. This was a beautiful young woman, extremely talented, worked in the film business. She was an editor. But obviously somewhere along the way, the troubles got to be too much for her. She decided to end her life, and it was a shock. I think no one saw it coming. Maybe the you know, she had a boyfriend at the time who was a friend of mine, and I think he may have seen it or had more insight to, you know, the troubled mind. But in the end, it was a shock to all of us. And it was kind of strange because it took me several weeks before it hit. I was actually confused about why do I not have any emotional reaction to this. It just didn't seem to hit. And then one day it hit and I sobbed like a baby for an hour. Mm-hmm. And from that came, I don't know that the idea came immediately, but certainly it was the seed, the germination that brought it, brought the idea out, which is the idea of reaching out, which is, you know, and it's, I think it's hard to tell people who are troubled that there are people there, that people will listen. Somehow people seem to get to a place where they don't seem to realize that that's still a possibility. And so reach out's kind of a call to action. It's if you're feeling down, if you've sort of found yourself in that corner, it's really dark. You know, try and reach out, try and speak to someone else, because we all know that we are there, you know, for people like that, that if they would just reach out to us and talk to us, that we might be able to help. Because sometimes I think it's a sense of isolation you know, hopelessness that overtakes somebody, and they need a little bit of extra human touch, or, you know, at least I would like the opportunity to change someone's mind. Mm-hmm. If that's the place they're in.
Sure.
The thing that's kind of cool about that song for me is that the pandemic brought a whole other sense of depression to people. And I don't know how many times I'd heard, you know, just being shut in and not being able to go out and the, you know, all of the aspects of the pandemic that just sort of beat down on us, that I thought that the song remains relevant even in that kind of context, that, you know, if you're depressed, you know, reach out. So that's the meaning behind it. Back to Zen Studios, where it was recorded, and Steve Conley. When Steve Conley heard that song, he said to me, "That's exactly the kind of song I'd like to play on." And I said, "Oh, really?" And he said, "Yeah." And then he started sort of rocking it up a little bit. And I thought, boy, I'm not sure if it's a rock song. But there was something about what he did to it. And that was that sleepless night I told you about. That was the night when I really said, boy, do I really want it to go this way? And then I let it settle, and I listened to it, and I thought, there's something about what he's doing here that's uplifting the song. It's really sending the message that I want it to send, which is, you know, buoyancy somehow, you know, finding the light. And so you know, I let him run with it, and I'm very happy with how it came out. You mentioned, you know, Blues and Roots Radio is a program that's run out of Port Credit near Toronto. They had an international song competition where it was one of the top 25 finalists. I submitted it for the World Songwriting Awards. It became a top 10 finalist in that. So it's very well received. I've had it played locally here, and it was nice because one of the DJs that played it locally, you know, in a conversation I had with her, she got it right away. She said, "I know exactly what this is about." Mm-hmm. And that was just nice to know that people understood, you know, the meaning behind it. And, you know, I'm hoping, you always hope that somehow your creativity will lift people up. And so that's one of the songs that I'm proud of, and hope it'll do that.
Yeah. Well, it is, you know, it opens upbeat, kind of poppy. And it isn't what I expected, I have to admit, when you first told me what it was about. But ultimately, it's a well-composed tune. And the performance of it is excellent. Your lyrics stand out, though, and I think that's important. They're not hidden behind the music in any way. And
I have to say that for me, and I know that these are questions you've asked other songwriters, you sort of ask them where it starts. Does it start with music? Does it start with a melody?
I haven't asked you that yet.
You haven't?
No.
But I'm going to do the segue, because for me, I like wordsmithing. It's one of the things that I like about writing, and I try and find ways of maybe, you know, a cute way of getting at a subject. You know, it's a little left turn here or there. And so the wordsmithing part of it is a real fundamental part for me. I'm always looking for, when I'm writing, to how can I say something, you know, a little bit profound? How can I put my experience out there? You know, how can I write something that might make a difference? I've got another song called We All Fall Down. And I played that at the Hideaway Cafe one night, and after I was finished, I went outside, and there were a couple of people outside, and they said to me, you know, that's exactly what we needed to hear right now. And I just, it was just so heartwarming, because you realize they were listening and they actually got the message. So yeah. The words are very important to me. You know, the tunes, you know, they often follow. Sometimes I have a lick, I have a riff, I have some chords, and I'll work something into that, and it'll be the other way around. But often it starts with the idea, you know, and the writing, and that's certainly the part that I love crafting.
Well, tell us a little bit about this song, We All Fall Down. What was it that night that, and what is it about?
Well, the thing is that it's kind of like Reach Out in a way, and that's that, you know, we all fall down. The sort of catchphrase is that, and just like the sun, you know, we must rise up once again. And so it's like we all have those moments in life where we fall down, but we all have to get back up and sort of get back at it. And, you know, there's a little bit of a philosophy in that song about, you know, if you're a traveler, the lessons you learn, that love and grace are something that you earn. And so, you know, I try and do those little twists of phrase that do get at some philosophy. But whatever it was that night, you know, I remember John Kelly saying to me, you know, they were clapping along to the song, and then I went outside and some people commented on it. So that you know, that's the reward in doing stuff like that.
Huh, that's great. I'm just glancing through the lyrics here. The lyric, back to Reach Out, your lyrics are kind of subtle as at the beginning. You kind of have to reach and look for what your real message is until you get to the bridge in the last verse here. Your last verse is, so you know that I could all end in a flash of blinding light, because choice is strength and time is short and we must realize. And you're a little more direct as the verses go.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how to explain that. I think there is some abstraction in the beginning. There's sort of more abstract concepts. And then it does get more tangible as it moves forward. And, you know, when you're writing a song, sometimes it's got to reveal itself too. You sort of find your way through it, mm-hmm. and it starts to create its own meaning. And when I got to the end of that one, you know, there was times when the sort of catch was that hope is a thing that you find. But in the end, I decided it was love. And hope is one thing, but love is another thing. And I think love is the thing that kind of differentiates us and saves us in a lot of ways. And so it was sort of a journey to get to that place in the song. And so I think that whatever came before sort of led to that place. And then I was happy that that's where it ended up.
Yeah. Have you ever, and I'll bet the answer is yes, although you may not think, have you ever started a song and it has really just veered off top and created a whole... Sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's times when you think it's going to go one direction and then it takes its own course, you know.
It is funny how that happens. And sometimes it's just you end up with one phrase and you write the phrase down only because it kind of rhymed. And they go, oh, well... There's actually some logic to this in the course of the writing, and let's just take it that way.
Yeah. You know, I back to Mark Doran's interview, and Mark was talking about, you know, sort of, you know, even down to the number of syllables you have and mm-hmm. how that will create, you know, a cadence. And that might take you off in a different direction because the cadence and the structure of the words themselves will sort of take you off in a particular kind of direction. So, again, that's where the wordsmithing is kind of fun.
Let's talk about the real development of this song, okay. Reach Out. your friend, she passed away. This was quite a few years ago.
This is many years ago, yes.
Okay. And you really had to sit on this for a while before you could really process it into a song, or did
it actually took quite a long time, I think, that for it to come out in the form that it's in now. I mean, I had some of these chords and these progressions, and I did play in those open tunings all the way back to what we talked about with Joni Mitchell. Mm-hmm. I love playing in open D in particular. There's just something evocative about that tuning that's open and airy, and so I'm always looking for what can I create around that kind of structure. And there were bits and pieces of this, and I think there might even have been bits and pieces that were other songs at one time. And then I slowly tried to pull them together, and it started to take shape, and you know, it started to show its final form. I certainly knew the subject matter and what I wanted to get at. But it took a while. I mean, it's probably, you know, that song's probably a year in the making, you know, from initial idea to where I got it to a place where I really wanted it. And then it's also a performance thing, which is, you know, you got to be able to take that out and play it. It's hard for me to play it the way it is on the CD. I mean, there's so much instrumentation that's on it. I think that the basics are still there. You know, certainly the chord structure and the feeling of it is there in live performance.
I think you had sort of set this aside for a little while, right? And came back to it after COVID or during COVID?
No, I mean, I had it before COVID, and what I did was it's one of those things. You said it about listening to your own CD. There's certain songs that you'll play for a period of time, and then you don't want to play them anymore.
Yeah.
You want to put them down for a while and come back to them. And I had put that song down for a while because, you know, especially when you're first starting out in writing, you don't have that many songs. And so you play a lot of things over and over, and the only advantage you have is if you can play in different places where people haven't heard them. And so, you know, until you build up a body of work, you're going to continually play those songs. So I put that one away for a while. And then I think it was actually pandemic that allowed me to bring it back. And I thought, wait a second, the meaning still flies here. There's still an opportunity and a different place to put the same idea. So, you know, it did sit a bit lie fallow for a while. I don't think anything changed in it, you know, fundamentally. Just that the climate had changed and there was another opportunity to showcase it in a different light.
Yeah. So as you play this, I don't know if you've been playing it solo you can't really replicate how it sounds on the album, but I think that's kind of a neat thing about a song like that, is that it just takes on a whole new, you know, it's like the unplugged version versus the recorded version.
Same absolutely
song, different take on it. And why not have both versions out there?
Absolutely. Well, and I have to say that when I play it solo, I've got a beautiful big dreadnought larrivé that I play the open tuning on. So the guitar is very, very full sounding. And when I play that song, it always gets a very positive reaction. So it's fun to play because you kind of know going in that people are probably going to like it. Mm-hmm. You know, you try and do it justice every time. But I have to say that it's always pretty well received.
Well, that's great. All right. So what's next for you? What's coming up?
Well, as I said, my wife was the one who encouraged me to do CD one. Now she's encouraging me to do CD two. And I have started, I've got the little home recording studio set up here to do the sketches on.
Yeah.
I do have another 11 to 14 songs, original tunes that did not get recorded. And so I'm excited about doing that. You know, you always second guess yourself and wonder, but after doing the first one, I thought, you know what, I might as well go at it and get another one done. You know, you talk about the photography and it being a similar kind of creative pursuit. You know, once you've got it in you, what was your phrase about creating?
I think a creator's got to create.
Creator's got to create. And there it is right there. Yeah. So, you have a restless heart if you're a creator. And so I'm on to the next project, and it's already got a title. It's called A Whole New Me. And so that'll be the next CD, and stay tuned. It might take a little while, but I'm going to get it out there.
L.A. Moore's sophomore effort, as they call it.
Exactly. Yeah. And the first one was called Late Bloomer. That'll tell you right there how long it took me to get going on sort of trusting myself to be a songwriter and putting that stuff out into the world.
I think I was 62 when mine came out. So you may be a little older than me. I'm not sure. I'm not going to.
We're probably close. Well, let's see. If I only put it out a year ago, definitely I put it out later than you did.
Okay. Hey, you know what? There's hope for all of us out there. Just listen to L.A. Moore, man.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. I've inspired many old geezers to get out there and play their music. I've had several people say to me, man, you know, you're inspiring because you're out there doing it.
Well, you know, and this is the thing about your music, though, is it's kind of a rock blues style, and it is timeless, you know? Yeah, it's not distinctive to, it's not modern, it's not old, it's the music that has been, we've been listening to for 50 years.
Someone had the bright idea of coining the term Americana, and I think Americana, but it does kind of embrace all of that, because it's all that stuff that didn't fit in those categories.
Yeah.
You know, acoustic bass music, which is what I consider mine to be. And certainly there's some blues influences in there. There's a little bit of rock in there. There's folk music in there.
Yeah.
So all of it's, you know, that's the mashup.
But all of this stuff, I mean, you look at, you know, in the course of the 60s or the 70s, the evolvement of music in a decade, we haven't had that real evolve, maybe because I'm not listening to the radio like I used to. Maybe there has been that involvement, but it just seems like there's, you know, what you're doing doesn't have a timestamp on it.
You know? I appreciate that. You know, I think back to your point, I mean, I consider myself fortunate. I came out of an era that had incredible music. I mean, the influences that were kind of injected into us, you know, and you think about the kind of music they played then long before they had, you know, the sort of genre thing. You heard everything on the radio, and certainly I did. I mean, I heard rhythm and blues. I heard Motown. I heard rock music. I heard folk music. And somehow all of that kind of makes it into your psyche. And I think if you're fortunate, you get to spit it back out in a personal way. And I hope that's what I've done.
Well, I think you've done that, and I think you've succeeded. And I think you've inspired me to come up with album number two. Although secretly it already is kind of in the works, because you know what? It just has to happen.
Creators got to create.
Well, listen, I hope we connect next time I'm down in Florida. It's a great area down there, and I'll look forward to seeing you out somewhere in some open mic someplace.
Yeah, look me up. We'll go out and play somewhere together.
I would love to do that. You, me, and Mark, you know, three amigos.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mark keeps saying he wants to do a house concert with me. I'm going to hold him to it.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, hopefully I'll be there for that. All right. Well, L.A. Moore, Larry Moore, Larry, let's see, what's the middle name? Alan?
Alan, yes.
Larry Alan Moore. So that's a good name, too, though. I want to point out that your website is L.A. Moore Music, right?
Yes, lamooremusic.com.
.com, okay. And a lot of good stuff there. You can listen to the entire album and, of course, purchase it if you'd like to. And we'll close off with the recording. And this is the full studio recording of Reach Out by L.A. Moore. Thanks very much, Larry.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Find the wonderful and new. So write it out and reel it in and seek the hidden truth. Confirm your fate, confess your sins while the night is deep with dreams. The days are bright, but the guiding light is never what it seems. So reach out, make your spirit strong. Time to see where you belong. Reach out,
spirit fly. Find a path that takes you through this life. The passages of length and time, and wider than your will. The ladder to the sacred place stands quiet, strong and still. For that is where the secrets lie in the faces you have known. If you walk through life, hold on tight to the wonders you've been shown. And reach out, make your spirit strong. It's time to see where you belong. Reach out, see your spirit fly. Find a path that takes you through this life. Do you see the answer that take you to a place that's high above and full of love, but not of time or space? Do you ask the question, are you still so blind? Live your life in such a way, leaves all hope behind. A flash of blinding light. 'Cause time is short and choice is strength, and we must realize that love is a force that lives and breathes and somehow finds a way to get down deep within our bodies, hearts and minds. So reach out, make your spirit strong. See where you belong. Reach out, see your spirit fly. Find a path that takes you through this life. Through this life. Through this life. This life. This life.
Listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.